So I'm Batya Friedman, a professor at the University of Washington, and it is October 24th, 2008, and I'm here with John McKay, a professor from Seattle University Law School, and our camera person is Max Andrews. And we're here today speaking with Avi. And Avi, could you say your name, your role here at the ICTR, and your nationality?
Sure. My name is Avi Singh. My role here is I'm legal assistant in the defense team for Jerome Bichem Mpaka, which is one of the four co-accused in what's called the Government 2 case here. And my nationality is Indian.
Okay, great. Can you tell us just a little bit more about your role on this case, what the case is about, and just your role, some general things?
It's bizarre. The case is about basically, it's a very wide case. It's been going on for 5 years. So we're still trying to figure that out in terms of what it's actually been pled against it. But it's if I could distill it down, if you can strip off sort of the factual allegations, which we of course contest, I think this case really comes down to if you're a government or a member of a government, a minister in a government, and a genocide or a major war crime event happens in your country, are you responsible? I mean, there's a lot of allegations about specificity, etc., which are really, but I think that's really what this case has always been about for me. And that's really what, if I could distill through a lot of the, you know, extra stuff that the prosecution throws, that's really what this case is about. The role of a legal assistant is, that's a harder question to answer because I don't know whether you want a de jure answer or a de facto answer.
So really, what have your activities been for this
case? You know, Philip and I have both legal assistants still. Our lead counsel passed on just last year. So, but basically, you know, beyond actually speaking in court, we've actually run the case. So you have the situation here where you need, used to need till last year, 10 years bar, call at the bar to actually be a counsel. And this varies from team to team, but more so because I worked at other international tribunals too, more so here than other places. Very often the legal assistants are running the cases to a large extent, and which could sound like, well, you know, we just think we're doing it, but it has been the case. You know, where, I mean, I remember, I really don't think that people actually read what they've signed in terms of pleadings, in terms of the paper, you know, actually getting up and arguing and cross-examining witnesses. We haven't actually been allowed to do, and we actually fought that battle and lost it because they said, no, that's the conditions of legal, because we're on legal aid. We're funded through the legal aid system. So beyond that, legal assistance basically, at least in our case, has been, you know, we've done all the writing, we've done all, between us, all the witness preparation, the strategy of the case.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, I want to take you back for just a moment to the spring of 1994.
Spring of 1994.
Yeah. What were you doing? Where were you and what were you doing?
I was an undergraduate. In 1994 spring, I was in, God, that's a good question. I was, I remember this. I was at the London School of Economics. I was in my third year. I graduated in 95. Yeah, I was in my third year. I'd gone there from the U.S. I was undergraduate in the U.S. I'd gone to the LSE for a year, and I'm not sure particularly what I was doing, probably. But it was, yeah, it was April, so exams were in May. No, June, so wasn't studying. Yeah, I think it was World Cup was later too. No, so I wasn't watching the World Cup either. But yeah.
So, and what were you studying at the London School?
International relations.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you become aware of the genocide in Rwanda?
When it was happening, huh?
So
when it was happening.
How did you learn about it?
Well, I mean, I'm a little strange in the sense that, you know, I read about 5 newspapers a day. And so, you know, I like to know what's happening in the world. And especially ethnic conflict. You know, I grew up with ethnic conflict. My parents, my family have been refugees from ethnic conflict. So for me, ethnic conflict is sort of, you know, that's what brought me to ICTR in the first place. But, you know, going back now, I remember the one thing that really, really peeved me off about the coverage about Rwanda then was the fact that there was this, now I know an academic term for it, the new barbarian theory, you know, something barbarian theory. There's a writer called, I'm forgetting his name, English writer who writes about this. But it was like they've been fighting each other for hundreds of years. This is, you know, usual ethnic conflict. I remember reading that and thinking, yeah, this is, you know, yes, that's what people do out there, you know, out there in the other world, sort of people. And, and I remember being very angry about the sort of the coverage of it then.
So you mean, so just that this barbarian theory is the theory that people are just fighting each other all the time and there's nothing new here.
It's what they, you know, my expertise, if you want to, I didn't know much about Rwanda then, mm-hmm. but I was actually, I did my, it's an undergraduate thesis, so it was only that limited, but I did my thesis on Yugoslavia, and they're the same thing. You know, the Balkans, they've been at each other for hundreds of years, which basically removes any amount of sort of politics from it, agency from it. You know, you take away all, you know, political, what happened in 20 years, that history itself is informed by things, and you just say, this is the way things are, so then there's no reason to change anything. It's just how people will be. The Balkans will always periodically go at each other with guns, and countries in Africa will periodically go at each other with machetes.
And what's your view on that theory?
Oh, it's crap.
And why?
Why? Why is it, it's a hard question to answer. Why is it crap? Because all ethnic conflicts are political, right? And you and I are of different ethnicity. We're on video, so people can see that, right? And people living in the same place are of different ethnicity, and you can create the political conflict quite easily over time as a political project through narratives of history. And there are narratives of history which are terrible in Rwanda, but that doesn't mean, even so that's itself political, but that doesn't mean that ethnic conflict will result either by people acting badly or people not caring enough or people letting people who have ulterior motives. It gets to a situation, and even when it gets to a situation, it can be contained. So there's specific political events that happen which lead to it, and they are avoidable at every stage of the, right? I mean, Rwanda was avoidable, and the blame, frankly, is shared by the defendants here, the people in power in Rwanda, first, because in the end it's their country, and they let it happen to themselves, and secondly, by the international community who played variously malicious roles in it. You know, we're all to blame to some extent. I mean, you know, we can always say, oh, we weren't in power and didn't have anything to do with it, or don't even know about it when it started, but in terms of international community, yeah.